Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to our show today. This is your host, Chris Deacol. In studio with me today, I have Stu Kent with S.W. Kent & Associates. He is a consultant to the retail industry and helps them improve their operations. And we also have Meredith Kahn with Versus Media, who is a internet and web specialist, who has lots of interesting things and a very interesting background in New York. So we'll have a lot of fun talking to both of them. I'd like to start with you, Stu, and talk to you about S.W. Kent & Associates and what you do. What do you do? Explain to our audience your services and the people you work with.
We're a retail management consulting firm, and we help our clients to improve their sales, build up their customer base, correct their inventory imbalance issues, solve some cash flow problems, and in some cases, develop exit strategies.
Interesting. How did you get into that business?
Well, I studied business, and for the last 30 years, I've been in the retail business, you know, and at the unit level, the district level, and even the region level, I found that there have been certain retail principles that remain consistent, and having the advantage of corporate training, I now use those tools to help independents to succeed.
Now, what was your background? Where did you come from, and how did you find yourself in your own consulting business?
Well, as we always said, I pretty much grew up within the Home Depot organization. The bulk of my experience in retail was with corporate big box retailers, and at every level, as I stated, I found a pretty consistent pattern of the tools that were necessary to be successful, whether you're running one store, five stores, or 15 stores. And in corporate America, that training is provided. But independent retailers, frankly, they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants, a lot of them. I mean, a lot of them come in with some retail experience. Most of them come in with a passion for a particular product line that they really love and kind of figure out how to run a business as they're going. Now, back when times were good, so to speak, you could run a business and luck could be a big part of it and you could be successful. But in these tougher economic times, the reality is it's taking a different skill set nowadays to run retail, especially when you consider that you're competing against not only the big boxes, you're also competing against the internet, and you're competing against even other small retailers.
The part of the problem is a lot of people, just like restaurants, they've always wanted to be in the retail business. They get in the retail business because they have money or credit. Then what happens?
Well, you know, for decades, it's really been, as I was growing up, I'm in my 50s, it's been the American dream to own your own business. And so everyone would jump in, and they would open up their store, and when the demand was outrunning the supply, people were making money despite themselves. They literally, you could go in there, like the most common thing is if you open up a store and you're not doing the sales that you want to do, a lot of retailers will go, well, you know, maybe I've got the wrong product mix. So they add in another line. And then another rep shows up and they add in another line. And before you know it, you've got all this merchandise and none of it is selling. It's because the problem wasn't that you had the wrong merchandise. It's a demand issue.
Yeah, and you know, when you say a demand issue, does that mean they just stocked wrong, or do they don't know how, or is it a problem of not understanding how to move that inventory that they have?
Well, there are some of both, to be honest with you. I can tell a story, and I'll make it brief. I can tell a story of a retired college professor from Philadelphia who moved to a quaint little hamlet in North Carolina and opened up a lovely little store right on the, mm-hmm. the little town is actually on the Cape Fear River Basin. And the street is called Front Street, so you've got shrimp boats, a boardwalk, a street, and then a row of stores. Well, in that row of stores, there's a very nice little eclectic bookstore. Now, this store is absolutely beautiful, and it's run by a college professor. Sounds very Norman Rockwell, doesn't it? It's beautiful. The problem is, in the particular town that she opened up that bookstore, the literacy rate is 31%. So 69% of the people who live in that town can't read above an eighth grade level. So as you can imagine, the bookstore, not that successful.
Wow. And she got in there, has a product line that's really not well suited to her clientele.
Correct.
You know, which probably need, I mean, it sounds like they may need more pictures than words.
Yeah, exactly.
There'll be somebody looking for me in a pickup truck with a gun, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, it's a question of, you know, not doing your market research, not understanding your market, and falling in love with your idea.
Absolutely. You know, if I weren't in the business of helping people who have already taken the leap, I would be in the business of, if I were going to sink my family fortune or my 401k or whatever into opening up my own business, I would gladly pay a reputable company to do some unbiased market research and then tell me whether or not it would be a good idea to actually open that business in that location. Because the vast majority, you know, that old cliche, location. The vast majority of retailers, the critical mistake they make is they absolutely pick the wrong spot to put their store.
If you have we've seen the restaurants on the side of the road that it doesn't matter what you put in there, it's
right.
not going to work.
Absolutely.
Is that what you'd call a bad location?
Well, yeah, there's things like transient traffic, and then there's milling traffic. There's median issues to be addressed. Mm. You know, oddly enough, a store right on the corner has a less chance of success than a store that's a quarter of a mile from the corner. Because pick any major intersection in Alpharetta, even the ones with the photo thing on them, and you know that when you're at that corner, you're pretty much obligated to go in one direction because it's four lanes of traffic each way. So if you're a store that's sitting on that corner, all your business is coming from 1/8 of the traffic, even though millions of cars go by a day or whatever number.
So you can't fall in love with a traffic count.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So have you ever thought about having a program or something to talk to people about, hey, you want to be in retailing? What do you need to know? There are people here that can help you make the right decision and avoid these pitfalls.
Well, sure. You know, the thing is, I am a consultant. I'm in the consulting business. And it's similar to what I do now. And I've thought about being ahead of the curve. But most, you know, a lot of people have a hard time disengaging their ego and saying, you know what, I'd love to do this. It's like saying, I'd love to fly a plane, but I don't know anything about flying a plane. Retail's different because, well, I'd love to own a store, and I've been shopping my whole life, so I'm sure I know everything I need to know about running a store.
Yeah, being on the other side of the counter is a very different experience.
Absolutely.
Many people get into businesses, and retail's no different. It's people management, it's inventory management, it's advertising and promotion. There are a lot of pieces to it. Where do most people fall up down with their stores that you help?
Well, I say, you know, this shows up on, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, my blog, my website. Hope is not a good business plan. And where most retailers stumble is they hope it's going to get better. They hope it's going to get better. And, you know, inventory management, I have clients who their inventory management skills are phenomenal, but they really don't pay a great deal of attention to their marketing strategy because they think of it as an extraneous function, but it's very critical. You absolutely have to market your business to make it successful, regardless of what corner you're on or not on. So that's one side of it. And the other side of it is I have other clients who they let their vendor reps stock their store. When the guy shows up from Wrangler Jeans and says, you need 50 pairs of jeans, they're like, okay. And they let him fill it up. So they got stores full of stuff that there's no use.
Yeah. Do these people tend to be different personalities, the ones that are very good inventory managers and just don't pay attention to the people side of the business?
You know, it's interesting you should ask that, Chris. I have found the dynamic that intrigues me is the partnership, you know, the old mom and pop operation. Well, one of them is the face of the business, and the other one is the one that actually does the books. And so those personalities, there are a lot of people in the retail business who are in love with the idea of owning a boutique. You know, they own that store. It becomes part of their identity. So they're so focused on that, the business side of it gets away from them. Most of the, frankly, these days, well, since about 2007, I'll tell you, most of my clients who are on the business-oriented side of it, they're all having the same sentiment. Why didn't I get out last year?
So, I mean, besides asking the question, why didn't I get out last year, how does a retailer know that they need you?
Well, there's a couple things you can look for. Number one, if they've seen a significant downturn in their business, and I don't mean year to year. I'm talking about macroeconomic. If you look like going back to 2007, since 2000, from 2008 to 2000 and now 13, if you're looking at a 35 to 40% downturn in your gross revenues, there's a pretty indication you might need some help. If you find yourself saying...
That sounds like a country song.
Exactly. If you find yourself saying, I'd love to advertise, but I just don't have the money. If you've cut your orders back, if you're building up your credit card debt or your vendor debt, if you're not getting new customers, and this is the one that amazes me that people do, and so many of them, if you have not given yourself a paycheck in the last 6 months to a year, and believe me, Chris, I've got clients who have not paid themselves in years. If you have not given yourself a paycheck, you have to ask yourself, and it's a gut check, what's my time worth? I spend 60 hours a week in this spot, and I'm not drawing it. I could go, you know, I have a number of clients who say, well, I'll just, you know what? I'm going to close this thing down and go work for Walmart. At least I'll get a check.
You can count on that check. The other one has not been materializing.
Exactly.
Is that, you know, what finally triggers somebody to pick up the phone and call you?
Desperation. You know, in all things being said, when you get to the point that everything you own has been leveraged, you've run up all your credit cards, you max out, all your vendors have put you on COD, you're literally behind on your lease. And you, because they at that point, then finally ego takes a back seat and folks go, you know what, maybe I need to try to find another solution before this. I always applaud, Chris, if I may, I always applaud the forward-thinking retailers, the ones who can realistically look at, put hope aside, because as I said earlier, hope is not a good business plan. Realistically look at the numbers and say, okay, well, if it doesn't turn around, how much longer can I run like this before I'm crushed? And just call me and find out if I can help you solve the problem.
Yeah. When somebody calls in a situation like that, is it too late for you to help them?
In most cases, no. But in sometimes, I mean, I've had instances where, if I may, there's a guy in the emergency room, he's laying on a gurney, he's bleeding like a stuck pig, and he's like, I need a doctor, I need a doctor, I need a doctor. I'm thinking, you needed a doctor a year and a half ago. Right now you need to get in touch with Jesus. You got a you got a problem on your hands here. This is way too extreme. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm not a miracle worker. I can help people regroup. But the longer they procrastinate, the bigger the hole gets, the harder it is to get out of.
You have fewer degrees of movement where right. You can help them.
Right. If you're 3 to 6 months behind on anything, or if you're juggling your creditors, and if you're struggling to make last month's lease payment, now is the time to call. Not when you've mortgaged your life.
Yeah, when the gun's pointed, not after the bullet has left the barrel.
Exactly. Yeah.
But human nature so often makes people wait until the very end before they'll reach out. You know, have you ever figured out why people are so reluctant to do that? Is it, you know, that'd be interesting, your observation.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple things. Over the last 10 years, the answer to that question has actually changed. And, you know, 10 years ago, people would do it because they hoped it would get better, and their they equate the success of their business to their own personal success as a human being. And then they say, you know what, if this business fails, then I'm a failure, which is the farthest thing from the truth. The reality is we all can think of companies we've seen come and go, the Montgomery Wards of the world, you know, it happens. business is born, it grows to maturity, it plateaus out for a while, and then it starts to die. Some of it dies very quickly, some of it a long, drawn-out death. That was before. But over the last few years, here's what I've seen. We have what I like to call deer-in-the-headlights syndrome. Depending on which cable news network you happen to watch, either tomorrow money's going to start falling from the sky, or the world's going to come to an end. Every single person out there is so afraid. It's the uncertainty. They're so afraid to make a move either way because it seems, because of information overload, that now there's a greater chance you're going to make the wrong decision. And so everyone is literally just they're waiting it out. And unfortunately, they're waiting themselves right into bankruptcy.
Yeah. This uncertainty is causing them to wait for a clear sign, which is not going to be there.
Right.
Or by the time it is, it won't matter.
Right, exactly.
So if they call you, what do you exactly do with one of your clients to help them?
Well, when someone, you know, the thing is, if it doesn't make sense to engage my services to help solve your problem, I'll be the first one to tell you. And I'll tell you right during our very first meeting. It surprises. I've had a number of potential clients say to me, I never expected that you would come here and tell me, no, I'm not going to do this for you. Here's a prime example. I'm not going to mention the city, but I have a potential client who, she had $600,000 of her daddy's money tied up in beads. You know, like beads for necklace, you know, build your own necklace kind of thing.
I do that every day, right?
Right, exactly. But my point is $600,000. Now, the average ticket in a bead store, about $15-16.
Wow.
So I told this client, I'm like, look, you got to understand, if I quadruple your sales, which is phenomenal, I'll tell you right now, that'd be a home. If I can quadruple your sales, that's a home run. If I can quadruple your sales for 4 months straight, which would be a huge stretch. When I'm done, you've still got 11 years worth of beads here. So her dad was literally, he'd made out a check to me. He had folded that check and was forcefully trying to stuff it in my shirt pocket. I'm like, look, I can't take that check because when I'm done, you're going to be no better off than you were before you met me. The only thing's different, you're going to be out the amount of that check. So I'm not going to take it. And so that's the answer to that question.
Yeah. You know, there are clearly people that you can't help, and the smartest thing you can do is, you know, you don't need me, you need a priest.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And you need somebody who can wholesale beads like crazy because you've got 11 years worth and you need about 6 months worth.
Right.
So but finding somebody, though, that is not to that point, that has a salvageable business, what kind of services do you provide them?
Well, you know, as I alluded to earlier, first thing we got to do is we got to figure out if they need to generate revenue. In most cases, they do. So we lay out strategies for generating revenue. Then, obviously, there's some operational efficiency issues that we can take a look at. There's also vendor debt negotiation, lease. You know, a lot of clients today, they say this, you know, I can't afford to stay in business, but I can't afford to get out of business either. I owe too many people money. Well, that's you can only imagine how frustrating it must be to find yourself trapped in the I can't get in business, I can't stay in business, but I can't get out of business either. So what I do is I work with a few different companies that provide services that are complementary and compatible. We'll generate you some revenue, get your vendors to take a reduced settlement, and negotiate you out of your lease. And if the math all works out and strategy A generates enough revenue to satisfy strategy B and strategy C, I can then, as they say, get that monkey off their back. See, my objective is to help my client to find a solution. And sometimes the solution is to continue in a different format. Sometimes the solution is to shut the doors and start over. Now, the client that continues in a different format, when we're doing the marketing work, I have a very successful now grocer just south of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, who a few years back was a very much unsuccessful hardware store because his location didn't need hardware. It needed milk and bread. And when we were doing the process, we found out he owned the building. When we were doing the process, we found out, you know what? Hardware will never work here. You're absolutely right. That's why it's not working. But a neighborhood grocery store would be very successful here. And we converted him to being a grocer, and he's now doing very well.
So you may not have to abandon your dream. You may just need to change its format. And to do that, you need somebody from the outside who has a very, you know, has a broad experience and B, sees your situation with different eyes.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, here's a perfect example. I was, when I was in corporate America, whenever the regional vice president of operations comes to walk your store, they're checking for, they're checking to see if you're complying with the company schematics. So you walk around, you're looking at all your merchandising information. Well, we're in a blue-collar suburb of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And at the time, we had a very nice Kohler Well-Worth toilet that regularly retails for $149. We had it for $119. That's a heck of a value. It really is. So as per the directive, I had it on an end cap. I had it broken down, you know, bowls on the bottom, tanks on the top, mid-beams with wax rings and all that stuff. The sign up top had all the bullet points on it. It was beautiful, beautiful display. It looked just like the book. You know why? Hadn't moved one since I put it up 3 months earlier. But right next to it, I had the Mansfield $56 toilet in a box. Now, we're in a blue-collar neighborhood but full of $60,000 houses. 30% of them are rental properties. My vice president said to me, you've got to educate your customers as to why this is a good value, to which I responded, just food for thought, as opposed to trying to sell them what we want to sell them, why don't we find out what they want to buy and sell that? And that's sort of been the philosophy of my business.
Yeah. Oh, but you usually get an answer like, well, our market research says.
Right, right. Well, there, you know, when market research is removed or it comes from far away versus boots on the ground, it's a whole different world.
And that's part of the service you provided, those boots on the ground that have been there, lived the life of these people, and can see their market through their eyes and through the eyes of their customer.
Exactly.
So, for those who own retail establishments and need help or are thinking, I should be doing better, I'm working really hard and I'm not making very much, or my sales are going the wrong way, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, of course, I'm at swkent.net. I'm also swkent@comcast.net. You can call me directly, 866-235-1240. Again, that's 866-235-1240. Or you can go to my website, SW Kent.
SWKent.net.
.net, right.
Great. Well, it's been great having you on, Stu. Can you remain in the studio for our next guest?
Oh, by all means.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome, Meredith. It's good to see you again. I know you from a meetup group. And you're with Versus Media. And will you tell us what Versus does and who your partners are, what you do, how you do it? And we'll talk a little bit about what makes you special.
Thank you, Chris. I'd love to talk about that. Versus Media is a partnership between myself and my partner, whose name is Kevin Strzok. We're based in Atlanta and Denver, so we cover the whole country. We're not localized to any cities. Several of our clients are international. In London, we have clients in New York. We have clients in Texas. What we really do is we build websites, we design them, and we develop them. And our philosophy is we want to bridge the gap between your ideas and your success. So we create websites that communicate your brand and deliver your message to your clients. And
how do you do that? What's the process? How does your mind work to get, what process do you go through to get people there?
Well, the process begins really with a questionnaire. We try to understand, because we work across many verticals, we don't just focus on one vertical, who are your clients? What kind of information do you think your clients want to see that it is going to attract them to your company versus your competition? And through this questionnaire, we better understand what their branding and their messaging is. We take also a very full marketing approach. My background is in marketing and marketing strategy, which helps. And once we better understand how they want to approach their clients and what works in their industry, we go through technical kind of requirements. Do you want video on your site? Do you want this, this, this? And then we can figure out how large is your site and how much of it is going to be more of a visual site versus a content-heavy site, which is a lot of text.
What kind of businesses tend to have one over the other?
We work with several small to medium financial services companies, financial advisors, and they typically go a little bit lighter on the visuals because they really do want to represent themselves in a corporate image. And my biggest role is figuring out really the information architecture and how the information flows and where is it appropriate to put a video versus written text. Look, in this age, we know we're all overwhelmed with the amount of media flowing through us, and basically you have about maybe 10 seconds on your homepage to keep somebody there. And our mission is not only to keep you on your homepage, but have you want to click deeper into the site.
How do you do that? What makes people want to stay on a page?
Well, typically the homepage will have some very compelling visuals with movement and animation, whether it's a rotating set of images, maybe a video. But my feeling and my perspective is I give them just enough to want to click read more. You don't want to give it all away on the homepage because then, of course, you know, they're going to be on.
Well, we've seen these homepages that, you know, look like, you know, they started with a roll of craft paper and they, you know, kept going till they got to the end of the 30-yard roll.
Yes, yes. I try to keep them fairly small, fairly tight. The trend right now in web design is very large sites. I mean physical real estate. I don't mean depth. Some of the newer sites you'll see have very large imagery. They're very wide. It used to be the philosophy was, well, we have to keep all the important information above the fold, which, of course, comes from the newspaper industry. And that is changing. I mean, if you look at some of the most current, even retail sites, you will see you have to do a lot of scrolling. So I think that notion of scrolling down is really, right now, I'm not going to say it's dead, but it's not in fashion. And by giving a lot of imagery at the top with a lot of navigation so they can move through the site, very clear mission of what they do, who they are, we then take them deeper into the site through that.
So part of it is art and part of it is science, it sounds like.
Very much so. And how compelling is the content?
Yeah. What's the biggest challenge with working with a client in developing a website? Speaking of content.
Right. Well, a lot of it is indecision. A lot of clients, they look at their competitor sites. That's something I also ask clients to do. Sometimes we have a new client who is a new business. Other times we have a redesign. And I'll say, send me some of your competitor sites that you really like. Also send me sites that have nothing to do with your industry, but you also like, so I can get a sense of what colors they like. I try to stay within a color palette that, of course, is already in an existing logo. And I'll evaluate their logos, too. As a designer, I can tell you whether your logo, has it been working? Is it worthwhile maybe to change it? Do you want to rebrand? So, you know, we'll establish a color palette, get, as they call it, a look and feel. That they like. And once that's done, we start to build out the site. It's sometimes the indecision. You know, you do a mock-up, you do this, and they say, well, I like this and this from this site, and then I have to figure out, will that work for them, and explain to them why it won't work. I think a lot of people think that web design is very, very easy because there's a lot of commercials that say you can build your website for free, you can get a website for $5, look what we did at home. And I hate to say it, but those websites look like they were made at home by somebody who has no sense of design or color.
It doesn't represent your brand or your value proposition well is really the problem with them. It's not that they're $5 sites.
Exactly. It doesn't. And
it's sort of like being in a house trailer trying to run a upscale restaurant.
Great analogy. And I try to explain to people what your first line of defense was when you met potential clients, your business card. It's not enough. First thing they do is they look at your business card, they look for your website, and then they go to your website. If your website does not look professional, interesting, it reflects on your company. You could be a multi-billion dollar company, but if your website is not usable and doesn't look up to standards, you're
finished. In other words, you're saying your website is a big qualifier to the average person who is checking you out. Because you have competitors, if you have a lousy site that you built at, your kid built at home, with $5 website design tools, compared to one that was done by a professional, you're not going to be really considered a competitor, or somebody to consider when a shopper is looking for a supplier.
That's right. That's right. I mean, think about even in retail stores, restaurants, they could have the greatest merchandise, the greatest food. If you walk in the door and it just doesn't look right, if it doesn't look clean, if the merchandise is not well shown, you might walk out.
Yeah. What are the big trends in web design today? What are people concerned with? And I'd like you to comment on those 11 years worth of beads and how that lady might have been able to move those.
Well, right now, I think we all know that the mobile market and tablet market is huge. I have some statistics. It is growing so quickly. It's estimated that there'll be 282 million tablets in use by 2016. Mobile phones, just in 2012. The percentage went up 81%. Now, we know what everybody is using mobile phones. They're smartphones. And tablets are being produced in great, great quantities. People, I'm not saying they're moving away from desktops and laptops to phones and mobile, but everybody wants to be able to see their favorite website, their e-commerce stores on their phone and their tablet. And what we do at Versus Media is because we are so aware of that, we employ what's called responsive web design. And it's a very interesting evolution in web design because when you used to do web design, you thought about, okay, is it a square screen, a monitor? How, you designed for resolution, meaning, size of the screen sort of on average in the middle, so it worked that way. Well, it's quite different. And what responsive web design means, you design once, and it's a fluid design that works on percentages. It understands how to scale.
It knows what kind of device you're trying
exactly
to look at.
Exactly. That's right. It'll get smaller, for example, on an iPad. If it's a mini iPad, it'll even get smaller. For smartphones, it gets a little more complex because if you have a lot of information on your site, part of what my job is to help people figure out what is really important. If you're a location-based business, you want to make sure that is front and center. If your regular website is heavy on a lot of video and a lot of scrolling imagery that takes up a lot of bandwidth, you may not want to put that on your mobile site because people have data plans and they're very concerned about that. And, there's always load time also. And, I think the phrase is fat fingering. If you look at an e-commerce store on a large desktop computer, you can't imagine trying to touch that on your small phone. And that is a big, big consideration. And I think I've been doing a lot of research on responsive design and listening to a lot of the academic leaders, and it's really evolving now. And to me, it's fascinating because it goes back to the human condition and how do we use the technology that we're that's forced upon us, really, and what do we want to get out of it. And I think in the next few years, we will see a lot of changes.
A lot of attention to human engineering.
Yes, and changes in the way mobile websites look.
Yeah. A lot of the websites that are used by mobile people now are particularly like find a restaurant, find a service or store near where I am.
Yes.
Do you take care of all that sort of stuff for people?
Yes. We can include geolocation into a site. It's so easy. You can do that with mobile. I mean, if they have that turned on, you can do it with a desktop. I don't know if you realize when you search after a while on whatever search engine you use, any of the ads and anything that comes up is located where you are. So technology is there.
I understand. What about shopping sites? Can you create a site like an Amazon for some retailer?
We can. We do e-commerce sites. E-commerce is of course a whole different animal in that it's about shopping. And as we see, more and more people are transacting business through their phones. And Amazon, it's a huge site. And if you look at it on your phone, you have to understand that the menus that might have been horizontal may be vertical. You know, you get people into where they want to be in a certain way. And I must say, there are a lot of e-commerce sites that are not quite optimized yet.
It's an evolving science.
Yes, it is.
Because the technology hasn't remained constant.
Right.
And so you're always playing some degree of catch-up. But for the average merchant that has 11 years' worth of beads to move, perhaps a website that has a shopping cart on it where you can buy beads wholesale might have been a good idea.
That's right. And we could do a site like that for a regular desktop, laptop, and it would be fully operational on a mobile phone as well.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't the typical, let's talk about the mechanics and the bits and bytes and the languages and all the kind of things that you usually associate with a website designer. What really makes you stand apart from many, well, I mean, there are clearly zillions of designers all over the world with every price point in the world, and some of them are astoundingly cheap, including one that I saw here in Atlanta for $239. I'll build any size website.
Yeah. And you're right. The competition is huge. It's also global. A lot of people go offshore to get less expensive sites done. What makes Versys Media unique is the complement of skills that I have with my partner, Kevin Strzok. He is a pure technologist, has many, many years of experience in server technology, security. When we set up your email service, because typically once you have your domain, you want your email, of course, going to that domain, and he works on that. We host some of our clients if they want. We do offer that service, and he is really around the clock, making sure the firewalls are right, everything is up and running. Whereas, and he can advise you too, as far as, I don't want to get very technical, but if you have a larger office staff and you want different type of email than just the regular, I could say Microsoft Exchange email, mm-hmm. that kind of a thing, he will set that up for you, ensure that it's working. My background is in product development. Going way, way back, I used to work for some very large companies in financial services developing trading room products for traders. I am very much a user-focused type of designer, and that's why I work very closely with my clients. And I think that the two of us together make us very, very unique. Plus, I have a very, very strong background in design. Recently, I completed a Master of Science in Digital Design and Animation in New York. So it makes me more of an expert in the design aspect, whether it's a 2D design on a website, whether it's a 3D animation for a video. And I happen to be a perfectionist. That's what I took away from, you know, there's a difference between working in Photoshop as an amateur and really designing production quality work.
Yeah, it's like a homegrown video versus one done by Hollywood.
Right. That's right.
You may not be able to articulate the difference, but subconsciously you can recognize.
Yes.
It.
Yep.
And that's what good design does for you.
Oh yeah, and you can. People wouldn't say that picture looks pixelated, but they're saying, why are the edges kind of funky looking? And, you know, I understand.
Or they may not even notice that, but there's something that's just not right,
right
about it.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting. Exactly. So you have a interesting approach to web design, which blends the heavy technology under the hood, which is like buying the car. You don't care what runs it or how it runs as long as it looks good and goes like crazy. So if people want a website that's professionally designed, technically excellent, and has the eye of a master in science in design, digital design, how do they get in touch with you, Meredith?
Well, the first line would be our website, which is www.versist.com. You can call me directly on 973-495-3510. And email is mkahan@versistmedia.com.
Well, Meredith, Stu, it's been great having you on our show today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.